All right. You guys had a good ticket so far? Yeah? Who is here for my talk yesterday? Okay, quite a few. I'm going to start with the same story that I started yesterday, which is how I, my first experiences with Windows Azure about a year or so ago. I was actually writing an MVC application. It was actually a REST application, REST services disguised as an ASP.NET MVC app. And I tried to put it up in the. It was working beautifully when I was running it in my computer, in Compute Emulator. And then I moved it up to the cloud. And, it just failed badly. It just went into this loop where it deployed it, and then it went into busy, and then it went into starting again. And just anyone seen that happen before to them? Yeah, so if you worked in Azure, the early days was such a common thing for you to happen. The thing was that Azure, in my opinion, wasn't mature enough back in those days, about a year or so ago. And one of the things that was mainly lacking was the tooling around it. So you fast forward about to a year from then on. Now you're up to Azure SDK 1.4.1. And not only that, not only is 1.4.1 a lot more mature than what it was a year ago, you have a lot of tooling support. So not only is Microsoft provided good support for it, there are a lot of free downloads from CodePlex. And there are also third-party vendors who actually come in to fill in some of the gaps that are there to be filled in. So, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Mahesh Krishnan, and I work as a principal consultant at Redify. And for the past year or so, I've been working in Azure. In fact, I've been working with one of our customers where we are trying to move all the customers' database across to the Azure. I would say it's actually one of the largest projects, Azure projects in Australia, if not the world. It certainly is in Australia. And most of the things that I'm going to be talking about is things that I've actually learned from my experiences working with Azure in the last year or so. So if you think about Azure, so if you look at the road ahead, I mean, you guys are here because you wanted to hear a bit more about Azure, and you probably got a web application or something of that sort, and you said, well, the web is the future, and I'm going to go there. And Azure definitely provides a platform for you to do it. It's got things like WebRoll where you can actually move your web application. And it's got WorkerRoll where you can run all your background threads. It's got, if you want to put your relational databases up in the cloud, you've got SQL Azure. And then you've got Azure Storage where you can put in things like your table storage and your blobs and your queues and so on. And then on top of all that, you've got heaps of other things. You've got content delivery networks or CDNs. You've got new ways in which you can actually authenticate people. You've got, if you want to talk to an on-premise application from the cloud, there's all this connectivity bits. But in spite of all these things, I think there are plenty of challenges. And, Azure actually says, oh, you've got scaling on demand. So if you want to scale up your application, you can just go ahead and scale it up. But the question is, how do you actually do some of these things? And the second question is, are there any tools available for you to do it? If you want to, you how you hit a pro if you hit a problem in Azure and it's basically gone pear-shaped, is there some way of finding out what has actually gone wrong? If you want to bump up your diagnostics level from errors to warnings, is there an easy way of actually doing it? And you've got a heterogeneous environment. I mean, a lot of people are working in enterprises where not only do they have .NET, they have things like Java and PHP. And you may want to move that across. Are there any tools for me to, are there any tools available to help you in that process? What about all this phone stuff that's actually happening? Windows Phone 7 and iPhones and the Androids. And is there something in Azure that'll actually help you send notifications across if you deploy your application in there? So what I'm going to be doing is the agenda for the evening is actually quite simple. I'm just going to reel out one toolkit after another and until we run out of time, basically. And so I actually picked out about 10. This is actually a tough choice to make. Because I was adding one and then said, oh, this is actually better. Maybe we should leave this out and we should put this in. So in the end, it kind of like decided on 10 tools or toolkits. So let's start with what I call the mother of all developer tools. There's a typo over there. This is what happens when you actually make changes at the last minute. Developer tooled. Never mind. Mother of all tools, Visual Studio Ultimate. How many of you actually have an Ultimate subscription? Okay, that's quite a lot. I should have asked, how many have Professional? Okay, that's it's probably actually half and half. That's quite good. Now, there are some things in the Ultimate Edition. There are some features that are that come quite handy when you're working with Windows Azure. So, you know, if you after seeing this presentation, there's probably enough in it to go and convince your boss, maybe. If you're working with Azure, you know, try and see if you can get an upgrade to Ultimate. There are three things that I'm going to talk about in Visual Studio today. One is there's a Server Explorer. The second thing is I'm going to show you how to do web deploy. And the third one is IntelliTrace. And the third feature is what Visual Studio Ultimate has that some of the other versions don't have. So let me switch over to Visual Studio now. So if you actually install the if you install Azure SDK and so on, you'll be able to see a whole bunch. You get these two options over here on the Server Explorer. One is the Windows Azure Compute and the Windows Azure Storage. So with the Windows Azure Compute, you'll be able to add your development environment, deployment environment directly over here. So you can just go in and I've already added an account over here, but I can just go ahead and pick something else. COS 204 is the other presentation that I did. And notice that it actually shows some... It actually shows the deployments that you've actually had, the instances that are there. You can go and select those instances over here directly. And once you do that, it allows you to see, it lists all the instances over here. This you can actually use to get to IntelliTrace. You can basically right-click over here and get IntelliTrace. But hang on, before that, why would you want to use IntelliTrace? So I've got a sample app that I'm going to run now. It's up in the cloud. And let me get to that. It's a very, very simple application. And it's got a couple of buttons in there, throw an exception and throw a... and it's got a little text box where you can actually type in debug messages and so on. So you've actually deployed this application across to the cloud, right? And throw an exception, this is being caught, no problem. If I clicked on this throw uncaught exception, I'm basically not catching it in my code, and it's going to blow up. And if I didn't put some enough logging in it, you're going to go and start shooting the dog trying to fix it. And what happens is you get it, and then you make your changes, and then you deploy it again. It's going to take another 15 minutes for it to deploy, and then find the same problem happening again. So how do you get around it? Now, with IntelliTrace, what you can do is you can right-click over here and say View IntelliTrace Logs. And that's going to go and download the IntelliTrace logs. Now, what is IntelliTrace? When you're actually deploying your application to the cloud, when I say publish over here, see, notice there's a little checkbox over here that says enable IntelliTrace for .NET 4 roles. And there's a settings as well. So what it does is it starts collecting data. So it basically collects a different state in which the application is, and whenever each and every function has been called. And so effectively what you can actually do is when the application has actually bombed out, you'd be able to get a stack trace of it and start inspecting some of the variables and find out almost straight away where it actually went wrong. You can specify in your application, you can just go with the default and say, well, just collect IntelliTrace when all these things happen. You can go in and granularly, if you want, pick at what times this whole thing, at what time and what events you want it to collect data. So I'm not going to go through each and every one of these things in detail, but there are some options that you can actually pick. Now I'm going to wait for this to actually download. This is going to take, I don't know, a couple of minutes to download. So while it's actually downloading, what I want to also show you is another feature that's available for you, which is, let me do this again. You go to publish. See this over here that says configure remote desktop connections? Now, when you deploy your application to the cloud, it is actually running Windows 2008, a version of Windows 2008. So you should be able to remote desktop to the machine and also find out potential problems that are there. So if you want to look and go and look at the event log, for instance, or see if you know, something's gone wrong in the file stored in there, you should be able to do all of that. So quickly demonstrate. So it's quite simple. What you need to do is when you are going to do remote desktop, you've got to create a certificate and attach that certificate over there. I've already done this in my example. So if I go over to my management portal and select this particular instance, see this little thing that appears over there called Connect? You guys able to see that? It basically opens up an RDP session. And that basically proves running Windows 2008. It's a funny thing that I want to point out. The copy of Windows is not genuine. But effectively, this is basically the Azure instance. And you know, if I went into Event Viewer and things like that, it'll all fire up and you should be able to look at all those details. Now, hopefully, we've finished downloading our IntelliTrace. It's still downloading. Well, I got one more demo to show before that. Oh, no, it has completed. Cool. Oops. I think it's already down. It's opened up the log file, probably. It's a bit of a struggle working with a 1024x768 screen, particularly with Visual Studio. Now, if I look at this, it shows me all the exceptions that have been generated. And lo and behold, I've got this divide by zero exception. And if I double-click on that, it takes me straight into the code where it was actually caused. Right? And you can actually walk up the stack. You can just go, well, okay, that's where it was actually called from. And you can go where it was actually called from. And you know, you can basically, you get the whole stack trace. And this feature alone, in my opinion, is enough to get ultimate, because it'll save you hours and hours of debugging and so on. There's also one other feature I wanted to show in Visual Studio. You know, if you've got one of the main bugbears is that you've actually deployed something over to Azure, and then you found, damn, I actually left this one thing out, and I want to test it. And if you make that little change and you deploy it, it's going to take another 15, 20 minutes. And that can be very frustrating, particularly when you're developing. I mean, obviously, you're not going to do that in a production environment. So if you're working on a web application, what you can actually do is make use of the web deploy that is available. So the way you do it is when you're doing publish, make sure you do this, check this box that actually says enable web deploy for all web roles. One of the things is that it requires remote desktop to enable this feature. What it does is when you do a web deploy, it'll remote desktop to that machine and basically update all your web application directly. So just to demonstrate how this actually works, and you can actually do it in less than 30 seconds. So let me go back to my screen that actually crashed and go to About. So I've got this demo for TechEd 2011 hosted up in the cloud. I'm going to make a small change to the about box, and then I'll upload it. So open up about, and then say COS 315, which is basically the code for this talk. And I should be able to go in and just hit publish. Yes, I want to stop debugging. Notice it says publish started. And there you go. It's done. Publish succeeded. So now if I go back and do a refresh, there you go. And now if any of you have had troubles spending 15, 20 minutes every time to deploy, that is a great thing to have. Just really quickly deploy it, and you know, in less than 30 seconds it's up there for you to see. But it comes at a cost. Now, you should only be doing this in the development environment, number one. The reason for that is that the changes that are actually made to that instance aren't persisted. So if you re-image the machine, you know, all the changes are actually gone. So you've got to package it up, and then that's the right way of doing it. But this is great when you're actually debugging. So in a quick and dirty way of actually fixing a problem and seeing that it actually works, this is really, really good. So switching back to my slide deck. Now, Visual Studio is great when you're using .NET. But what about some of those people who are using something like PHP and Java and things like that? Now, there are if you're using PHP or Eclipse or Java, chances are that you're using Eclipse for as the IDE. Now, there's one download which is actually called Windows Azure for E or for Eclipse that you can actually get installed in your in Eclipse, and it provides you the same features, at least close, that are there in the Visual Studio IDE. Things like, you'll be able to look at a Server Explorer and, what you saw in Server Explorer, look at some of the instances and all that. You'll be able to do it from Java, or from Eclipse, rather. And you'll also be able to deploy it into your compute emulator. So let me quickly show you how that's done. So I've got an instance of Java open over here. To actually get this installed, what you need to do is you've got to go in and say install new software. And you can pick the... Thank you. All right, let me start again. You start up Eclipse, and then you go over to help, install new software. And in the work with over here, you need to type in the URL, which is that. http://windows-azure4e.org/update. And that will basically get you all the stuff that you need. And you can select all of them, and then install it. So the first thing I want to show you is the Windows Azure Storage Explorer, which is squashed over here. There you go. So you can basically connect to any storage account over here. But we'll just go with the dev storage account or the storage emulator. So I've already got some data over here. I've got some few blobs that I can actually look at, which is actually taking a while to show up. Excellent. I have a feeling my storage emulator hasn't started up. Okay, let's fix that. We'll come back to this after we deploy to the compute emulator, because then it'll start it up, and I don't have to start it up manually. So we'll first go ahead and create a project in Eclipse. So I go in here, Windows Azure, new Windows Azure project. I'll choose a Windows Azure PHP project. We'll call this COS 315. Next, and I'll call the COS web. And the data storage will be Windows Azure Data Storage. I can then go in and add diagnostics, enable diagnostics if I wanted to. Verbose, and I'll pick 60 seconds. So what I'm basically doing over here is setting what you would normally set in Visual Studio. I'm basically saying use the development storage to store things, and then I want to enable diagnostics. I'm setting the verbose level to I'm setting the diagnostics level to verbose, the log level, and then I'm saying, well, transfer it every 60 seconds to the dev storage. So hit finish over here, and that basically goes ahead and creates the project that you normally do when you're using Visual Studio and say create new project. It creates a web project and a cloud project for you. This does exactly the same thing, but this time it's doing it in PHP. And now I can go in over here and then say Windows Azure, deploy Windows Azure PHP project to in Dev Fabric. Now, Dev Fabric is a name that we use for a compute emulator when we were in Java 1.2. And a lot of people still tend to use it. And they obviously haven't updated this in this tool. So give it a couple of minutes. It shouldn't take a couple of minutes, hopefully. Now, what this does is it will start up your all the emulator. It'll start your compute emulator, and it'll start up your storage emulator. And remember, I actually tried to query the storage emulator from Eclipse, and it failed. That shouldn't happen anymore, because it would have fired up. There you go. So Windows Azure emulator is now started up. And so is the computer. Now, if you look at this over here, that is now running in computer emulator. That is basic PHP code. And I don't want to make any changes to PHP because I'm not a PHP programmer, so I'll probably mess it all up. But yeah, this is standard PHP code, and if you don't believe me, I can actually show you some of the code. It's created this whole big project over here, and it's all in PHP, index.php. And going back to my Storage Explorer, if I click on some of these things that should show up, and if I go over to my tables, I've got a whole bunch of data over here. I can double-click on this customer table, and that should bring up customer data. Sorry? I can try. I haven't used this tool that much, actually. Click on that, and then... don't know. I'm not sure whether you can actually add it. So we'll come to that later. I'll actually show you some tools that you can actually use that will allow you to add some of these things easily. In fact, even in Visual Studio, you can do a lot of this stuff. It's only read-only data. It's very hard, unless you use some plugins, it's very hard to add data to blobs and table storage. There's also, so switching back to my slide deck. Now we've covered PHP, I guess, and Java. I also want to talk about Windows Phone 7. Or if you think about it, Windows phones, or I should say mobile phones, have actually changed the way a lot of applications are actually written. A lot of people are now checking their emails on the phone, and they get notifications, and Twitter, and everything is happening on the phone. So sending these notifications and the ability to actually access some of the storage information directly that is stored in Azure is kind of becoming more and more important. So there is a download that is available. It's called Windows Azure Toolkit for Windows Phone. And what it allows you to do is it allows you to create an application using which you can send notifications directly to a Windows phone or an iPhone. In fact, they have plans to include Android in it as well, so you can actually start sending Android notifications. But I'll switch over again to my machine. That is a CodePlex project where you can actually download it from, watwp.codeplex.com. And once you've actually downloaded and installed this tool, what happens is you go over to Visual Studio and you say new project, and you go to cloud, you get this thing called Windows Phone 7 Cloud Application. I'll just create a new one. We'll call it COS315. Now, when I do this, it's going to go ahead and I've got to add an account name, and I'll use the storage emulator for now. Notice that it's got Microsoft Push Notification Service support, and that'll add it to your application. And it also got an Apple Push Notification Service support. I can click on this, but it'll actually ask me a certificate because I still need to connect to the Apple site. So I don't have a certificate, so I'm just going to cancel this, and we'll just go with that one. And notice that the Android Push Notification is kind of like grayed out, which means it's going to come at some point. Next, I'll just use the ASP.NET Membership Store to store some of the information for authenticating and so on. So I'll just hit OK. What this will do is it'll go ahead and create three projects for me. One is it'll create a Windows Phone 7 application. The sample application can show you how to hook up to Azure. The second one is a web application that allows you to manage some of these things. And the third one is an Azure project that will actually host the web application. Okay, reload. So once you've downloaded, it actually gives you some kind of guidance and so on, but let's go to Solution Explorer, and I'm just going to hit Run without making any changes to the code. But first, I'm going to select the Windows Phone 7 emulator rather than the device. Now, notice I haven't written any piece of code over here. So this just actually works out of the box. But obviously, this is not the application you'll be shipping, and you'll be writing your own application on top of some of these things. And we'll wait for the web application to start up as well, which is happening soon. I can go in here and start running the app. That's the WA Toolkit WP7 app. And notice it actually says this is not a valid certificate. That's because if you look at the address at the top, it says HTTPS and it's a localhost one. So obviously we don't have a certificate signed by a CA, a root CA. So we can ignore the certificate and say, well, I trust this site, so we'll just continue along. But unfortunately, if I'm going to do it on the Windows Phone 7 app, I mean, it's not supported, so I've got to install the certificate. So do this, and I go here and install the certificate. Tap to open the file. I'll install the certificate. Obviously, you wouldn't have to do it if it's a trusted certificate, but because it's a local host running on HTTPS, hit OK. And I'm going to, if you notice, look at this application. It's got this nice Metro theme as well. Log on, and in case you forget what the admin password is. Okay, good. And I'll go back to my application, and I can register. So I'll just go and register. Let's say, press page up, choose a username. I'll call it COS204. What's your T? Okay, I'm now registered, and I should be able to log on. Now, what I would like to do is I would like to register for push notifications. So I'll go in over here. Now, on the website, I've clicked on Microsoft Push Notifications. There's someone called Mahesh has already registered, but we'll see if I can get this and subscribe to notifications. And once I've done that, notice that it's actually saying registering with push notification service, getting last notification updates, it's all registered. Now, effectively, if I do a refresh over here, I should see another user over here, which is what we added. Okay, so let's send a raw text. Dude, COS 315 is an awesome session. And straight away you notice that's actually come up over here, notification on the mobile phone. Now, you can also send messages to the tile. So if I go back over here and pin this, I can go in over here and start sending some messages. Straight away, you should see that pop up over there. I can send another message as well. And that will basically increase the count. I can also send a toast notification. So a toast notification is something that will actually pop up on the phone with a message. So I can go in and say, I'm going to send a toast this time. Raisin toast. There you go. That actually happened. So all this support is actually built in for you. Now, obviously, you're not going to have an operator sitting there in a call center typing all these messages out, right, to all the people that are there. So you'd be doing this through a worker role and so on. But this is kind of like the code that is available for you to start plugging in straight away and start using it. And similarly, on the Windows Phone 7, if I switch over to the solution over here, look at reference. There's this assembly called Windows Phone Cloud.Storage Client. It's got some of the SDK in there that you can actually use to talk to the cloud and so on. Sure. Yeah, you can. Yeah. I mean, this one is from a website, so yeah, this is on a web role, so you can. Okay, cool. Now that we've done the Windows Azure Toolkit for Windows Phone, there is another download that's available in CodePlex, and it's called Windows Azure Accelerator for Web Roles. Now, remember I told you earlier that when you do a web deploy, every time you actually re-image, all the changes are actually gone. Now, this accelerator, Windows Azure Accelerator, that's only available for web roles, allows you to do a web deploy to multiple instances. And you can have multiple projects that you can actually use. Just build your standard web application and do a web deploy. And it will just work. So I'll show you how that works. First thing is, you go over to this site on CodePlex, Windows Azure Accelerator for Web Roles, and you just do a download. And notice that there are only 310 downloads, so it's not that popular just as yet. But once you download that, and if I go over to my Visual Studio, I should see a new project type over here again. Windows Azure Accelerator. Windows Azure Accelerator for Web Roles. I just go in and say COS 315, hit OK. Ah, fancy that. So what I need to do over here is I need to put in my storage name and my account name and account key. This will not work in your local dev storage, so you can't use the dev storage account. It's got to be a proper Windows storage account. So I will COS315, and so what I've done is I've pasted the access key from the Azure portal and pasted it over here. So that is basically my credentials to log into my storage account. Hit next. I also need to specify an admin username and password. Now, this is the account that I will use. What it does, it actually creates a website. And in that website, you can go and create multiple, you can basically go and create other websites. It's basically a front for it. It's like a website manager. So again, this gives you some guidance on how to go about doing it. I'll quickly show you how the solution looks like. When it shows up. Now, again, there are two projects created. One is a project that hosts the website manager, and then a Windows Azure project. So this is the website this is the website manager project, and then there's the Azure project. I'm not going to deploy to the cloud now. It's going to take another 15 minutes, but I've got one already deployed. So I'll go over there real quick. This is the website manager site. Notice it's actually running out of cos315.cloudapp.net, which I deployed just before the session actually started. I can go ahead and create a new website. And I'll... Can you guys read it? Do I need to bump the font size up? COS315. So what it does is whenever traffic goes over to that application, COS315cloudapp.net, it looks at the header and redirects it appropriately to the right site. So I've got to specify what that site is over here, what the host name is that it's going to be hosted in. And that's it. I hit create. And it would generate that site for me. I can actually go in over here now. And it will... let me go back. I don't want to log off because I'm not sure I can remember the admin password. but what I need to do over here is I'll go over here again, and I can create a new website project. Web, ASP.NET web application. In fact, we can even create an ASP.NET MVC app. I can go create this. Sample app. Now notice there is no indication of whether this is a website or this is going to be a cloud project. So I go in over here and I'm going to deploy it. First thing I need to do is I got to go and add the deployable dependencies. If I've got ASP.NET Web Pages, Razor, and so on, it just adds all the right assemblies for me automatically. So if it's an ASP.NET MVC site, there's another option for it as well. I can go here, and then when I say publish, it asks me what the service URL is. The service URL is nothing but that. And the site would be COS315, which is the website that we set up. I've got to leave extra files on the destination, and I've got to add my remote desktop username and password over here as well. This will literally take about 15 to 30 seconds to start up. There you go, publish, succeeded. If I go over to my application now, that's basically the ASP.NET app that I deployed. That was extremely quick. Now, I got to admit that I actually cheated. In the sense, what you need to do is you need to redirect any traffic that is actually coming to COS 315 to your actual, you know, the cloud app.net, which I specify in the CNAME. Or in my case, what I did was I went over to my host file and I just set that virtual IP address over there directly. But effectively, if you do that, whenever you type in that URL, it will redirect it to this address over here, cos315.cloudapp.net, and then it will redirect it to the right site. Yes. So there are two websites that are actually deployed. If you go over to that machine, remote desktop, you'll basically say two sites over there. No, it's in the same instance, so it's not increasing your cost. No, it's not. That's what I need to set up. That's why I said I cheated, because that I need to go and set up so that I can do this. Right. It's not that straightforward, because I need to go in and set the CNAME so that cos315.com redirects the traffic to cos315.cloudapp.net. And then that will resolve and redirect it to the right website. That is internally. It'll look at the headers and it'll do it. Now, I actually work in a project currently that has about three web roles, four worker roles, and we've got about six environments we're actually deployed to, right? So you obviously don't want to do any of these things manually. And to top it, each and every site has its own certificate that we have to use. So it'll become a major nightmare if someone is actually doing this manually. So we've kind of like automated everything. And one of the things when you're thinking about automating is PowerShell. If you're working with Windows and deploying, PowerShell is the way to go. So Microsoft have actually released the set of commandlets. It's called Azure Management Tools Commandlets. Again, you can download it from the internet. I'll quickly show you where that site is. So if you think about it, there are functions that you want to do in the Management Studio. Say you go add a certificate, or you've got a package that you go in and you can manually upload over there. Or if you want to change some configuration information or change the diagnostics information, you can go in directly to the Azure Management Portal and make those changes. Now, like I said, you want to automate this. There is a REST API available to work with the Azure Management Portal. And it is really hard to work with REST directly. I mean, you're not going to have your ops person going in and typing in all the REST commands and uploading things. So what the PowerShell commandlets do is it basically has a wrapper on all these things. So you can, just by specifying commands through these PowerShell commandlets, it uploads a certificate and it uploads your package and so on and so forth. So there are a whole bunch of these things that are available to you. So I'll just quickly show you what's available. I mean, it's very close to what's on that list over there. Yes. So the way we actually do it in our application is we've got, we use CS Pack, we use MS Build and we use CS Pack to actually package it all up. And then once it's all packaged up, we use PowerShell to upload the certificates and a whole bunch of other things. Load the whole thing up into the cloud and so on. Yep.
How would you create a package for the certificates that they have? And you will have to do all that in a MSI to create the package and then ask them to run a.
Yeah, well, We will actually, I'll take this question offline. I'll answer it at the very end because it's going to be a long answer for that one. Yeah. So, yeah, so the answer to that is, you know, kind of. So let me switch over to my machine over here. And I'm going to cheat. So that basically allows you, adds your Azure management tool snapping. If I did get command on it, that lists all the commands. Now notice that it's got things like add certificate, get hosted service, and get hosted services. And things like set Azure log, set event log, whole bunch of these things. Now, if this is not enough, there's a company called Cerebrata, and what they've done is they've added a whole bunch of other commandlets to, you know, that you can actually add. And you know, I highly recommend getting that because it doesn't cost that much, rather saves you all the time writing it on your own. Now, talking about Cerebrata brings us to our next topic, which is this product called Cloud Storage Studio. Now, if you're working with blobs and queues and table storage, you know, you can do it in a limited way within Visual Studio itself. You'll be able to view data. But what if you wanted to do something more than that? And that's where Cloud Storage Studio comes into play. This is a product from a company called Cerebrata, as I mentioned earlier. I'm going to start it up now, the tool itself, and then show you some of the features that it's got. Actually, I've got it running already. So it's quite easy to use. It's a WPF app. And it's kind of like a, with the 1024 by 768 resolution, it's a bit of a challenge to show a really good demo of it. But if I go in and go into tables, click on sample, it actually shows all the data over here. And if I wanted to do some filtering, I can click on filtering and say, you know what, I want to use a query builder, and I want to make sure that the name's title is equal to, let's say, Mr. And it'll basically apply that filter on the data, and it'll display the results. It's quite a handy tool. You can also quite easily add tables and so on. So if I wanted to go ahead, let me work with the data dev storage because it's a lot quicker to work on it. So if I wanted to add a new table, let's say I go and add a new table. Call it products. Notice it allows you to import data quite easily. So in my case, what I want to do is I want to get data from a relational database. And I will do just that, get all my database from AdventureWorks. I'm sure there's a table called product over there somewhere. I'll pick that. And it shows all the columns that you want to import. And I can just go in and do next. And I want the row key to be, let's say, the same as product ID. And hit next. Upload. And straight away, it starts uploading all my data from a relational database from SQL Server. Now, this is a great way if you know, if you're thinking about moving some of your stuff from relational database across to start using table storage, because table storage is a lot more scalable, I guess. This is a very good way of doing it. There is an export option available for you over here. Sorry, let me just. But your export is, you know, you wouldn't be able to, you can do it to delimited text and XML and so on. You can't upload it to a relational table. It doesn't support that. And of course, you know, you can work directly with queues and you can work directly with blobs and so on and so forth. It's quite a handy tool. Now, there's also another tool from Cerebrata. and it's called Diagnostics Manager. Now, remember when I started the talk, I actually told you sometimes it will be very difficult if you want to change the trace level, whether you want to move it from debug to include warnings, and whether you want to make it verbose and things like that. And you know, what if you wanted to correct things like performance logs and so on? The Diagnostics Manager allows you to change all that after your system has been deployed into production. So switching back to my other screen. So in Diagnostics Manager, it basically puts everything into a nice little dashboard for you to see. And you can say, well, I want it refreshed every minute or so. And that basically displays all the trace logging information. This application doesn't have that much of information. So we can actually start generating. So remember that little app that I actually showed you before? Web app? Let me see if I can go back to it. I'll start typing, putting in some trace statements over there. I'll also do a warning. I'll do an error. If I jump into Diagnostics Manager now and say, hey, I want to obtain the trace logs, notice that every minute, after it started collecting data, some of the counters have actually shown up as well over here on my dashboard. But anyway, let's look at trace logs. And I can select the range in which I want the trace logs to be obtained. Now, if you actually worked with Azure and you're trying to get some of this data and you look at the table storage to extract this, it's a lot of work. Now, this tool basically makes it a lot simpler for you to do. So I can basically say, hey, I want to get all the information in the last current week even. And I can hit get data. It's brought up all the information over here. It is possible, though, some of the message that we actually typed didn't make it to this log because there is a delay. There's almost like, you know, we can actually configure how frequently you need to grab the data from trace log and put it into this. You can actually change and update this data. So the way to do it is you go in over here to into remote diagnostics, double click on it, and you can click on this configure. You can go in over here and say, well, I'm interested in Windows Azure logs, verbose information, and I also maybe, you know, if you want to add other things like Windows event logs, you can actually do that as well. You can start initiating infrastructure logs. You can go in and start adding performance counters as well. So it'll collect all that information for you. It is quite a handy tool for you to use. Notice that you can actually get all the IIS logs, IIS failed request logs, and crash dumps. It basically provides you with a nice UI to get all this information. And again, you've got to pay for this tool, but I definitely think it's worth paying for. There's also another tool, and it's called Clumsy Leaf. Clumsy Leaf actually works as an, you can actually deploy it as a plugin in Visual Studio. Once you deploy it as a plugin, it allows you to do a lot of those things that I showed you could do with the storage, the CSS, the Cloud Storage Studio. So I've got it installed already on my Visual Studio. So let's just quickly have a look at it. So if I go in and look at all the subscriptions, I can double-click on storage accounts and hosted service. Just give it a minute to come up. So nicely within Visual Studio, you can actually double-click on it and see all those things that are available in your Management Studio portal. So you can look at the production environment, and you can look at the staging environment. You'll be able to click on a button and configure those things. And then you can also, just being a little bit slow to refresh, there you go. So I can go and click on, I can do my remote desktop from here. I can look at the log viewer. This also allows me the ability to manage my diagnostics. If I click on this, it'll come up with a slightly different user interface. I can set up very similar things. What my information about my diagnostic infrastructure logs, how frequently I need to get it, what level I need to set it up, and so on and so forth. There you go. So you can actually set the buffer quota limit to 1 meg, transfer logs. You can do all of those things over here as well. This also has this nice feature where you can go in and manage your SQL Server accounts. And so yeah, this is again, if you don't want to leave the comfort of your Visual Studio IDE while you're working with Azure, this is actually a nice tool to do. And it's from a company called Clumsy Leaf. A lot of times you want to move your SQL Server database that you have from an existing application and move it up to SQL Azure. There are various ways you can actually do it. A lot of people use SSIS. Some people just manually do it. They'll right-click, which is, we've done that in the past. Basically create the schema from SQL Server Management Studio and then start cleaning up the code, because the DDLs in SQL Server 2008 are sometimes not compatible. There are some syntax that is not supported. So you've got to go get rid of all of those things and then move it over. And once you've moved it over, then you've got to start thinking about how you move my data across as well. So the SQL Server, SQL Azure Migration Wizard provides you with a nice UI to do it, very simple database migration. And again, I showed this yesterday in my talk, so I'll try and keep it quick. So click on the SQL database that you want to move. What did I do? Screen. Thank you. I wish I had a copy of that in front of me so I can actually look at what is being projected. Never mind. Okay, I click on. I brought up the SQL Azure Migration Wizard. It is a standalone app, and you can get it from. Where did I put it? There. You can get it from that, from the Codeplex project, SQL Azure mw.codeplex.com. Hit connect. I can actually select the database that I'm going to be using, which is, I can use AdventureWorks Lite 2008. And once you generate the script, I want to go ahead and do the complete. Notice that it actually starts flagging some of the things that aren't compatible in red. Those are the things that you've got to manually fix yourself. In a lot of cases, SQL Server 2008 R2 is not fully compatible with SQL Azure. There's a lot of things that will not work. Things like if you've got CLR data types and so on. So in this case, what it's flagged is, let's have a look at it. It says it's got an XML index, and that's not supported in SQL Azure. So in some cases, you've got to manually fix some of these things and then get it to run. So, but this is actually a great tool, because when we first started and we didn't have the SQL Server migration wizard in our project, we manually went in and changed each and every individual line. At least this will get you most of the way if your database schema is complex. And if it's very simple, in our demo yesterday, we didn't have to do any changes because ours was an extremely simple case. And it just basically works. Now, I've got to point out that there are other tools that you can actually use. There is something that's coming out of Micro, it's currently in CTP, called Backpack. And Backpack allows you to transfer the schema and also the data from an existing database across the SQL Azure. That one is currently on CTP. Getting close to the end. Number 10, LinkPad. Anyone use LinkPad over here? Okay. You can use LinkPad to connect to Azure as well. And it's what I want to quickly show. Now, you know, when we were actually playing around with some of the Cerebrata tools and, you know, you querying data and so on. But if you could write the link statements yourself, you can get fine-grained control over some of the things, what you select and so on. And as a developer, that's pretty good. So, and particularly if you've you know, written libraries for some of those things. So let me show you what I'm talking about. Yeah, I haven't started just yet. Last time when we were doing this yesterday, there's another person over here who was doing all the switching. So it worked. I'll create a simple app over here. I mean, you know, I've got a customer table in my table storage. It's pretty simple. And I've written a customer service data context that basically wraps around and allows me to create a customer service data context that I can run my link queries over. Now, if I were to run this, my queries would look something like this in code. So, you know, just get the development storage, get the data context, and then start querying over it. Now, if I were to use the same thing with LinkPad, that would pretty much be the equivalent. If I did that, it just gets all my results quite nicely, and I can basically work with this, get rid of that, and start working on my link query, add more conditions, and all that. But to do that, I need to do a few things. So if I right-click over here and say query properties, I need to go ahead and add a few references. The first thing you would actually add is your system.dataservicesclient.dll. You also need to add these two. Your service runtime on your... Actually, you don't need your service runtime, but I've added the service runtime mainly because I'm actually using something over here. The cloud storage account is probably in there. And my data context contains the data context that I'm going to be querying upon. That's a nice handy tool. Now, I told you I'm going to show you 10 tools. I actually lied. I actually included 11th one. And Fiddler, how many of you used Fiddler over here? Okay, everyone. Now, Fiddler is basically an awesome tool. And you can actually use it in when you're... You remember I told you, you know, when you're talking to you know, your storage account and so on, you use REST API all the time. And it's actually invaluable to find out sometimes what those calls, you know, what those calls are being made and so on and so forth. So Fiddler, for those who don't know, basically it's a proxy that actually sits. So it's basically a proxy that you actually install and it runs on your machine. And then every query that you make, it goes via this proxy. So you can actually look at the contents and figure out what the traffic is that goes on back and forth. So in our case over here, if I did, let's say, as a little query to let me open up the cloud storage. We run a couple of queries. And websites. If you go back to Fiddler, that'll basically show all the traffic that's been through it. That's basically the query. And you can look at the raw output that you got out of it as well. It's basically the XML data that was obtained. So I think that's a pretty good tool. Now, hopefully I've covered, it's kind of like this session was basically a mishmash of a whole bunch of tools and tools that you can actually use. And you know, I was trying to do justice to see which tools I can fit in and which tools to leave out. Now, hopefully, I've covered kind of quite a big range out there, and you'll find it useful. Just to list all the tools one more time. Basically, we went through Visual Studio Ultimate. We looked at Eclipse and Windows Azure for E, and then the Azure Toolkit for Windows Phone 7, and then we spoke about the Windows Azure Accelerator. PowerShell commandlets, and then we looked at a couple of the Cerebrata tools, CSS and Diagnostics Manager, and then we looked at Clumsy Leaf, the Migration Wizard, and finally Linkpad, and I threw in Fiddler as a bonus. Any questions? Question is, do you have a performance hit when you use IntelliTrace? Yes. You should only use it in your development environment. Don't put it in production, because every time it does something, it actually uses the storage to log it, and there is a hit. And not only that, when something actually fails, it doesn't restart properly. So you shouldn't put it in a production environment. Yes? No, we were running. Yeah, you can. There are some. I think you can run Java as well. There are a few more loops that you need to jump, but yes, you can. If you got no other questions, call it a wrap. All right, thanks, guys.